Finished. Hang up to stop recording.
This call will now be recorded.
Okay, I think we may have several recordings going. In any case, welcome to everyone to the last meeting before we meet face to face again. Can you do a roll call, please?
Yes, certainly. I'll do that for you, Avery. Philip Shepherd. Mike Rodenbach?
Here.
Zahid Jamil?
Here.
Uta Decker?
Yes.
Christina Rosette says she will be joining the call late. Cyril Chua?
Yes.
Tony Holmes?
Yeah.
Tony Harris? Greg Ruth?
Here.
Mary Wong? William Drake?
Yes.
Carlos Souza will also be joining the call later. Adrian Kinderis has sent his apologies. He won't be on the call. Tim Ruiz?
Here.
Stefan Van Felder?
Yes.
Jordi Ibaragvira also has sent his apologies. He cannot be on the call. Chuck Gomes?
Here.
Edmund Chan?
Here.
Terry Davis?
Here.
Olga Cavelli?
Here.
Avery Doria?
Here.
Philip Shepherd?
Here.
And for staff, for our liaisons, we have Han Chuan?
Yes.
And for staff, we have Kurt Pritz, Denise Michel, Rob Hogarth, Marika Koenig, Liz Gaster, Craig Schwartz, Margie Malam, Julie Headland, and Glenda Sanchefi. Have I left anybody off the call?
You said Philip showed up after you passed by his name.
Yes, and I called his name, Avery.
Okay, great.
Okay. So we have... ...17 votes, which is over quorum and... All the constituencies are present.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'd like to ask at this time if anyone has a statement of interest to update. I didn't see any in email the last couple of weeks, but if anybody has any changes they wish to bring up at this time.
Avery, this is Glenn.
Yes.
Adrian Kinderis updated his statement of interest.
Oh, okay, I missed that, sorry.
And since he sent his apologies and not on the call, I actually should have mentioned it during the last call, but the updated statement of interest is on the website.
Okay, thank you. Any other statements of interest that need to be updated at this time? Okay, please do so if you need to. Okay, in terms of the agenda, I switched around items 4 and 5. Basically, 4 was the IDN GTLD fast track, and 5 was the IRTP Part B issues report discussion, and I basically put the issues report before the IDN GTLD fast track, because then item 6 was issues arising from GAC position paper and geographic names. So they should be thinking about GTLD together or in sequence. I had had a full item for discussion of IRT report when making the schedule. I didn't know if it was going to be available at this time. At this point, we've seen the announcement that it won't be available until, tomorrow, I guess it is. So it's basically just going to ask for an update on where that's at, as opposed to having a substantive discussion on it, and we'll need to fit a substantive discussion into our face-to-face meetings on the Saturday, Sunday. We were going to need to do that anyway, but this means that'll be the first discussion we have about it. And if we get there, I've added the action item list under any other business. It's almost always on the agenda. I left it off this agenda. Hopefully we'll get to it. It's been sort of revised and updated, so I would like people to take a quick look at it. It's been moved over to Seth having the token for updating it, and it has improved immeasurably in that short period. So, any other comments or items for the agenda? Okay, if not, then we'll proceed with the Unifil Council minutes. have two sets of minutes to approve. The first set of minutes is from 16 April. The URL is in the agenda. Do I have anybody making a motion on those minutes?
I will so move.
Thank you. Chuck, is there a second?
I am second. Olga.
Thank you, Olga. Is there any discussion on those minutes? Okay, on hearing no discussion, all those in favor of the minutes, of accepting the minutes of 16 April 2009, please say aye.
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 All those
aye.
Opposed, oh, sorry. All those opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. The minutes of 16 April 2009 are approved. The minutes of 7 May 2009, URL is also on the agenda. Do I have a motion for those minutes?
I'll move so that again.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Seth. Any discussion on those minutes? Okay, hearing no discussion. All those in favor of accepting the minutes of 7 May 2009, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Are there any abstentions? Okay, thank you. The minutes from 7 May 2009 have been accepted. Next item is item 5, which is the RTP Part B Issues Report. Marika has a presentation, which I believe was sent around, correct?
No, I think the link is included in the agenda.
Oh, okay. So everybody can find the link. And then, Marika, the floor is yours. And after the presentation, I'll take a cue for questions and answers. Thank you. Marika?
Okay. You can turn to slide 2, basically a little bit of background information. As probably most of you know, the IRTP defines a procedure for transferring domain names between registrars and was adopted as a consensus policy in 2004. After the implementation of this policy, the Council decided that a review would be appropriate to determine whether there were areas for improvement or clarification. And to this end, a working group was formed that looked and basically provided a list of these issues for improvement and clarification, which were then subdivided in one PDP that focused on the clarification of the reasons for denial, and 5 separate PDPs that looked at a whole range of issues related to the IRTP. So and one of those has recently been concluded, the IRTP Part A. Following as well a recommendation from that group, the council recently resolved to request an issues report combining 2 issue sets originally outlined by the working group. One called Set B, which looks at 3 issues on doing transfers, and a couple of issues that look at the registrar lock status. So an issues report was submitted to the council on the 15th of May this year. So on the next slide, you'll just see an overview of all the issues that are being addressed in this issues report. I don't go through them here because we'll look at them separately. But I'm turning to slide 4. The first issue that is covered in the issues report is whether there should be a process for the urgent return of a domain name, whether that should be developed. And this especially relates to situations where there's suspicion of fraud. This was an issue that was discussed in the ethic hijacking report that was developed in July 2005, and there it was suggested that such a procedure should be developed and should complement the existing transfer dispute resolution procedure. The issues report identifies a number of questions that will need to be considered in this regard. For example, what is the extent of the problem? Does it warrant a new policy or policy changes? How do you ensure a fair process? Who should be the decision maker in this area? Like, who decides whether a transfer is conducted fraudulently? And as well, it would probably be good to look at which market solutions or best practices currently exist and whether they would be sufficient or could potentially serve as a model for further exploration. So the second issue that was covered in the issues report is whether there's a need for additional provisions for undoing inappropriate transfers, and it specifically relates to whether the registrant can overrule the admin contact. the policy is clear that this is an option, but how this is currently being implemented is at the discretion of the registrar. And some of the comments that have been received in the public comment period as part of the overall review of the IRTP have indicated that this return of a domain name that has been transferred is considered to be very difficult. For some, the process is unclear. The IRTP Part A working group came across this issue as well and actually recommended that the appropriateness of a policy change that would prevent a registrant from reversing a transfer after it has been completed and authorized by the admin contact should be considered. So the third issue that is covered in the issues report is whether there should be special provisions that would look at for a change of registrant when it occurs near to the time of a change of registrar. As mentioned here, the IRTP does not really deal with that, but it is is something that often features in the case of hijacking, so that first the registrant is changed and then the domain name is transferred out. Some of the comments received on this issue indicate as well that really the liability for fraud in transfers lies with the losing registrars, and as a result, some registrars have taken preventative measures. There's some, for example, optional transfer prohibition periods following a change of registrants, meaning that after you change the registrant details, you're not allowed to transfer a domain out for a certain period of time. But some registrants have indicated they find this unnecessarily restrictive, because, of course, you can imagine cases where someone takes over a domain name and would like as well to go to his registrar of choice and then is prohibited from doing so for a certain period of time. So this is another issue that that probably needs further discussion. Then the following two issues look at the standards or best practices on the use of registrar lock status. So the question here is, should standards or best practices be implemented, looking at when it may not, should or should not be applied? Here again, comments have indicated that the variations in the use of lock statuses and the variability across registrars has added a level of complexity especially for registrants, because they don't understand how they can actually unlock their domain name. So the issue here is whether further consideration should be given to greater standardization or that more precise definitions of appropriate use of lock status should be explored. So the last issue covered in the issues report was actually passed on from an earlier PDP on the clarification of reasons for denial, and this one specifically looks at denial reason 7, which states that a domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status. Again, the practices vary here, and it's deemed confusing or not always clear for registrants how they can deal with this. Again, deals with the same issue, whether there should be greater standardization or more precise definitions. As mentioned before, this was discussed in another PDP, but I think at that time the group felt that it really needed to be discussed in conjunction with the previous issue, which looks at the same questions. So taking this into account, having obtained the opinion of General Counsel that these issues are in scope and that staff does consider that these enhancements of the IRTP will be beneficial for the community in general, we recommend that a PDP should be initiated. So then, on slide 10, some of the next steps, it's now for the Council to consider the issues report and decide whether or not to initiate a PDP. I think we discussed as well at the time of the request of an issues report that it would be open as well for the Council to consider setting up these issues if deemed appropriate. And I just wanted to highlight that we have scheduled a brainstorming session in Sydney on the Sunday morning from 8 to 9:30 to benefit from the opportunity of having a broader community there to already have a short discussion on these issues and hopefully get some people interested into joining a working group that is likely to be created following the Council's decision. And then there are some links to the issues report and to the consensus policy itself. So,
okay, thank you. I'm going to open up the floor to questions. One thing I do want to indicate is that I have put a slot on the agenda for the meeting on the 24th for approval of this PDP. Of course, we would need to have motions if we're doing the committee of a whole that produces a working group method as opposed to the task force method. You know, we need to have, the notion that we're doing that. So we need at least the motion before then. We don't necessarily need a working group charter. In fact, if we're talking about putting a working group, having that be one of the topics that's known about the Sunday morning is probably a good thing. So I would like to open up the floor to the report, the issues report, or the process we follow going forward. Anyone? Okay.
Aubrey, I'd just like to suggest that maybe Marika could prepare the motion and distribute it appropriately.
Well, is the IRTP Part A group still working with Marika on this? It would be a question I would ask.
They're dormant for the moment, but they have indicated, I think most of them are very happy to continue, and I'm quite sure they would be eager to reconvene and look at that. The only question, of course, is that we, if we want to get it done in time for the Sydney meeting,
they're not active at the moment.
We need to try to set up a meeting as soon as possible, but I think they would be, kind of speak on their behalf, but what they've said so far, that they would be happy to continue working on this.
Because it would seem a good idea to me to ask them to sort of help with beginning to work on the charter. And in fact, if we could have a charter in front of us when we're voting on the PDP, that would probably be the best of all worlds. Otherwise, we end up with a lag in between. If we can't, that's okay. But certainly, I can work with, you know, Marika and anyone else that's interested in making sure that we have the proper motions. And from anyone that followed the motion we had on the post-expiry, the complexity that arises in sometimes having absentee ballot that is not completed and having a bylaws-mandated task force vote in the same meeting where the PDP is decided, when the PDP is not decided until afterwards. I've been going back and forth with legal counsel figuring out how we properly word motions to make sure we've covered all our proper bases when doing that. But is there any other discussion on this at the moment? Would anyone else like to be involved in crafting the motion other than Marika, who was volunteered by Chuck, and myself, who volunteered myself?
Okay. Aubrey, would you agree as well that I involve the working group?
I think involving them in email would be great. I think needing to have a meeting, if it can't be scheduled, is something that, for the motion, I'd be, wary of. But certainly if they can meet and they can propose a charter, that would be great. So, yes. But we should produce the motion even if they don't have a chance to work on the charter.
Okay.
Does that make sense to everyone? That seem like an okay way to go?
Okay. Yes.
In which case, thank you very much. If there are more questions that come up on this, I don't know how many people have actually had a chance to read it and whether they're hearing it for the first time, please bring up the issues on the mailing list. And then, of course, please get involved in the working group or have people from your constituencies get involved in the working group. Okay. Moving to the next agenda item, which is item 4, which is the IDN GTLD Fast Track. When I first put this on the agenda, it looked like there would already be a motion on the table, though I didn't really expect us to be able to vote on it this soon, but at least we'd have a motion on the table. There's been a little bit of a slowdown, but as I saw at the moment, there is readiness. So, Edmund, if you'd like to talk about where we're at on this one, I have also tentatively put this one on the schedule for the 24th to vote on any motion that you'll be mentioning and discussing today, if it's ready. So,
sure.
Edmund, floor here.
Sure. Okay, I guess I'll, I'm not sure if most people have had the chance to take a look at the draft charter yet, but I guess I'll just go through it a little bit, what we covered in the drafting team. As next goal. This is a concept that is modeled very much after the IDMC concept, and it's following from some of the activities the CNSO had previously, especially about IDM TLDs, both CCTLDs and JTLDs. And this one, of course, is focused on JTLDs. So the draft charter sort of created by the drafting team is actually, if you look at it, it's very similar to the IDMC charter, and it's split up in six sections. First one is fairly simple. It's just listing out the purpose relatively clearly to have an IDM GTLD fast track that is similar to the IDM CCTLD fast track, and hopefully would be in a proximity in terms of time frame. The second part is the scope. I think the scope, we've tried to mention two important parts, one of which is that it should not it should follow the policy development that has already been done, that this particular IDNG work group would not be creating new policies, except that it should look back at the policies already developed by the GNSO previously in the IDN working group and other venues, and focus on the implementation part. The other part of the scope is what items the group should then focus on, including a number of items, including the definition of the IDM GTLD fast track, what limited scope it would be, some of the requirements for which, and what if contention arises, what happens, under what conditions application moves to the new the full new GTLD process. And another a couple of important additions were to take a look at the types of IDN GTLDs, and also a concept of having, if we are going to implement this, that it, there should be at least a comfortable amount of time before the full new GTLD process is ready for this to be meaningful. And I think this is an important addition to the scope of what the work group is supposed to be. The third part is just a general process. It's similar to the IDNC. Two reports will be produced, an initial report to get more feedback, and then a final report that should contain elements that are implementable for staff for a fast track. And then section four is talks about the membership. Again, it's very similar to the IDNC, except a significant difference is that we think it's much better to open up the membership rather than have it very limited as the IDNC had, because that was one of our own criticism for that group earlier on. Section 5 is the timeline. I think that still needs to be worked on. The basic concept is to have this, obviously, hopefully we can put a motion together, and if it goes through and if the board adopts it, then we would work between Sydney and Seoul and create both the initial report and final report by Seoul, and that's sort of the time frame that is envisioned. Last section of the charter talks about the background, talks about how IDN and IDN TLDs was discussed at ICANN since 2000 and all the way to here, all the stuff that has been done and all the indicating some of the demands from the community, and also some of the recent resolutions from the GNSO about this particular topic. So that was the draft of the charter, and I think Avery mentioned that we did get some delays. It's mainly because of my own health problem. I was down for a week or two, but I should be back in a reasonable shape. And we should have we're looking to put together a draft motion for consideration, hopefully to consider it in our next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Question I have is, do you believe that it is reasonable to have this on the agenda and that everything would be ready for discussion and possible vote, although the vote could, of course, be delayed until a future meeting? But do you feel that everything is on track for doing that?
I do feel so, yes.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to open the queue to anyone who would like to ask a question, make a comment, general discussion on both the topic itself and having it on the schedule. Anyone? Any questions?
This is I. Just had a question.
Certainly, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, just wondering. I'm looking at this. I actually support the idea of this working group, and I'm just wondering from Edmund if he thinks the timelines set are sufficient, and is it that I see that point five. We start in July. There's going to be interim protocol that compared to 30 days. I'm just wondering, you know, what his views were about the timeline. Does he think that this is sufficient?
Yeah, that's a good point. And as I mentioned earlier, that's one of the things that needs to be worked on a little bit more. I think the initial hope is to have the working group in motion after Sydney, and then and have the results come in by Seoul. Whether that would be feasible, I think it depends on multiple things. So in the next iteration, I think we will focus more on the amount of time that each particular part needs to be, rather than putting real dates in there, because it's depending on a number of decisions from the council and from the ward and other areas. So that's a good point. That's definitely one of the areas that needs to be worked on.
Thanks. Anyone else wish to speak? Does anyone want to speak to the idea itself and bring up any issues, either for or concern with the issue itself?
Avery, if I may, Stefan here.
Certainly, Stefan.
Following on from your last point, I don't have issues. I'm on the drafting team. I just wanted to go back to the timeline issue, because I do think, just to highlight, I do think it is a crucial aspect of this work. Edmund mentioned that we've been asking ourselves the question of what is a minimum feasible delay between a possible fast track and the actual release or full release of the GTLDs. And if we think about this, time is already a bit short if we stick to the timeline that's being given to us now, which is Q1 2010 for the first round of applications. So once again, that is a crucial aspect of this work, in my opinion. If we, start a fast track a couple of months before the actual first round, then it's doubtful that it will have much use.
Right. Stefan, that's a very good point, and I agree with you on that. And we did discuss this the second team as well. The situation and the sort of concept behind this work is really that seems to a lot of people the new GTLD timeline is slipping every time, a lot of the times it's been slipping for a long time, and we don't know whether it might slip further. So I sort of took up this work and say, let's do some work on this, and if in the case where it continues to delay, then we at least have done the work and will be in a position to implement a fast track. So yeah, the time itself is definitely a crucial element of it. And even though we're being told that the full new GTLD process will be at a particular time, I still think it's worthwhile to go through this process and, you know, be prepared. And, of course, I think everybody would be very happy if we do meet those timelines. And but if we don't, we at least have a body of work that's ready to be implemented if that happens.
Thank you. Any other comments? Is there any view in the planning and the milestones of this to, and I don't know what the date is for that yet, to the current IDN-CC-PLD fast-track plan? Is there any correlation or attempted correlation there?
I should say there might be some attempted correlation, but I think they need to be somewhat independent. Except that with the fast track, I think the ability at least to make the two at more proximate time is more likely to.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before I move on to the next item? Okay, then. So I guess at this point we'll keep looking for the motion and for the charter proposal and plan on having a vote or at least discussing the vote at the open meeting in Sydney. Anything else? Okay. Moving on then to, and thank you, Edmund and drafting team. Moving on to item 6. Basically, there's two different issues in this that are arising from the GAC position paper on geographic names. One is a process issue, and one is a substantive issue. In terms of the process issue, we basically got a protest. I don't know if there's a formal protest and if protest is really the right word, but I'm calling it that. Basically, after we had sent out the letter, very briefly after I sent out the letter that I noticed, that basically we shouldn't do these things without there being full-time or constituencies to review before making final, decisions to send out a letter. Now, this is a process we've used several times before, pretty much always based on, you know, the fact that we were essentially writing about positions that had already been approved previously, and therefore we're using these letters that we did rather quickly as a way to reinforce points. However, since the issue has been brought up and it was requested that this issue also be one of the issues that was on the agenda for Wednesday, I'm basically introducing the issue to the council now and basically opening up the discussion to any questions on it or any further comments in terms of that. I think one of the issues that I've had with it is that I think that in practice what we've been doing is indeed a valid process. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been fostering it and trying to use it. But I've also recognized that in terms of council members' freedom to vote, we do have some cases where constituencies really are the determiners for every vote, and in some where the constituencies more give the council members a direction and expect them to stay within the direction, sort of a difference of view. And if there are constituencies that do have the more direct control of council votes, then it does seem like perhaps we do have to take into account the constituency approval cycle, which means that we have to take into account that any of these things we need to do quickly, like send a letter, have a longer time. For example, we really have to get the letter to where it can be reviewed by the constituency over a two-week period before sending it in. So I take a cue on this topic. I'll get to the second topic afterwards. Anyone wish to speak on it?
Aubrey, I'll comment.
Okay, Chuck.
Because we talked about this in the registry constituency yesterday. Unfortunately, the person who filed the protest or whatever, wasn't able to join us because of a conflict with the IRT. So, you know, most of the people in the call on yesterday, that we had yesterday, really thought that the issues in the letter we sent were really all GNSO positions that were fully supported by the GNSO previously, so that nothing new was really introduced there, and therefore thought that it was, you know, okay, the way the process as you described worked okay. And in the case of the registry constituency, there were several people involved in the little drafting team, and the final letter was distributed to the registry constituency list so that people could see it before it was sent. As you know, unfortunately, the one person didn't see it until it was just a few minutes too late. So we'll see. I think it is good we're talking about it in Sydney, because maybe we can refine the process and make it even better as we go forward. But I just wanted to share that at least for those who were on the registry constituency call yesterday, they were relatively comfortable with the way it happened.
And one of the things I've also done is sort of try to refer the issue to the OSC, because going forward, it seems reasonable that if such a technique is usable, then it might as well be documented as opposed to relying on practice. And you know, not as part of the bylaws, I would hope, but certainly as part of, you know, council practice and procedures document. So I think it's good that it was brought up, and also that the OST does take a look at it. Would anyone else like to comment on this now?
Avery, if I may.
Certainly, Stephanie.
Thank you very much. Yeah, just I think this is a bit of a matter of striking the right balance, and I think it's a difficult balance to reach. But if you take the example in hand, we did have a very limited amount of time in which to draft a letter and send it. So in cases like that, I'm not sure that it's really realistic for us to seek each constituency's feedback, knowing that sometimes constituents may take a while to respond to feedback requests, and still be on time to do the things that we need to do when we're trying to send a letter and respond. And I think that in certain cases like these, we can also perhaps suggest that councillors are elected by their constituents to sometimes use their own judgment and make their own decisions. Obviously, they need to refer to their constituencies, and I think that's always the case. But when there's an element of time and being pressed for time, I think the council also needs to be able to act. So, once again, I think it's a fine balance, you know, it's a delicate balance to find between going back to the constituencies, getting their views on something, and being able to send out a GNSO Council view. And I do note that we discussed this on the council list, and there was the suggestion that some of these, when we're drafting a letter like this, we're acting as the GNSO Council, maybe not as trying to encompass the full representation of all the constituencies. So maybe that's a distinction worth noting or working on as part of the work that you've tasked the OSC with doing.
Okay. This is Tim. Can I get in the queue on that?
Certainly, Tim.
I'm fitted for the queue as well, please.
And Christina, please. One thing I will just bring up that the person making the protest has said is that GNSO Council and GNSO is not always easy for people to make. Okay, I've got Tim.
I guess I'm not, with all due respect to my colleague on the council, I guess I'm not completely convinced that such a distinction can or should be made. You know, I'm on the council as an elected representative of the constituency, the registrar's constituency. So I guess I wonder, you know, I question whether, you know, we can separately then just say, well, this is the council view, not necessarily the constituency view. I don't see how they can be separated, to be quite honest.
Thank you.
Avery, can I just...
Certainly, okay.
Just on that point, I wasn't saying they should be. I'm saying we should look at it in the work that, you know, if the OSC is going to look at these issues, then that's a question that should be asked. I'm not presuming the outcome of the question.
Thank you. Philip?
Yes, I'd just like to make a comment distinguishing, I think, between the issue and the principle. As you know, on the issue, the BC councillors chose to abstain. Now that was mostly because, you know, by using our experience and judgment, we knew that this issue was one where there were different opinions within our constituency. So although we did have some discussion on the constituency as well during the few days available, it didn't change our usual instinct, which was that we'd probably abstain on it anyway. But I think the general principle, though, is one that I support, as expressed by Stefan. We need to ask ourselves as councillors, are we elected representatives who use intelligence and judgment about some principles, sometimes with guidance, because you might have published position papers which allow you to know the sense of a particular issue in the constituency, or are we a bunch of trained hamsters who run back and forth between the constituency and council meetings? And I think, you know, we need to answer those questions carefully in terms of assessing our own value, because if we're merely saying all councillors are just carriers of messaging between constituents and council meetings, you know, we may as well do the whole thing by email and get staff to run it for us and dissolve council.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Zahid. I'd like to get in the queue.
That was Zahid.
This is
okay,
Christina. Like back in the queue.
I got Philip. I've got Christina. I didn't hear.
Tim, yeah.
Tim again. Okay, thanks. Sorry. Christina.
I just wanted to reinforce that what Philip was saying in terms of on this particular point, it was very much issue driven. And frankly, it was driven by the circumstance that, you know, I was in a conference room for 3 days listening to people who traveled from all over the country and in some cases transatlantically to make presentations to the IRT. And at that point, my principal responsibility within the constituency was to work on that. So I think there does need to be a clearer delineation of what the expectation is. I think there needs to be from the outset made very clear by certain constituencies, if it is in fact the case that they will under no circumstances allow their councillors to sign on to such letters without consultation. I don't know if that's true. It may be, it may not be. It may be that as new constituencies develop that there will be some that take that position. But I just think that we need to, instead of trying to make some very bright line rules, find out what the circumstances are, find out what the situations are, and recognize that in some instances it simply is not going to be possible on a very short time frame on certain issues to get full support from everyone. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just how it is. Okay, thank you.
Could you add me to the queue, please? It's Tony.
Sure, Tony. Okay, please. Hello?
I thought somebody was before me.
Yeah, no, I had Zahid next.
Hey, this is Zahid, sorry. Yes, I'd like to support what Philip says. I think it's important that we do understand that we're not supposed to run back from a constituency, and we're supposed to take some decisions based on documentation so that we do have an a sense of what we think our constituency would want in the council. And I just think that the situation was suffered from the lack of time that we had, and just want to make that comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Tim.
Yeah, I guess in general I agree with Philip as well, but I think Christina makes a good point that we shouldn't assume that all constituencies are going to operate under the same rules, and that there may be some that will on to some extent require approval from the constituency before positions like that are taken. But regardless, I think those are all good questions, but I think that, to me, the more important one is, can we expect the rest of the community to be able to distinguish between two different types of communications from the GNSO? We can try, but I think in reality, it's going to come down to that if the GNSO makes a statement, it's going to be assumed that constituencies support it. And I think it's going to be difficult to try to create some kind of line there to differentiate between the two.
Tony.
Well, in principle, I agree with Philip as well, but this particular instance, it just showed how difficult this can be, because again, within the ISPs, I was aware there were clearly different views on this topic, and that's why we chose to abstain as well, because it was very difficult to negotiate through that. And that just underlines Tim's point, that it's pretty difficult to make sure that the right message gets out to the community as to what's happening. And unless we can actually find a way of always making that clear, then I think we're going to hit this problem time and time again. So, yes, in principle, support Philip, but we should recognize Tim's point. It really is the reality.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
So I think, as I say, this will be on the agenda. I look forward to a lively conversation on it. And I think it is good that the OSC has picked up the issue. I know that I've gotten very aware of the difference, because any time I've made the mistake of saying the GNSO as opposed to the GNSO Council did or said something, I've had one member of the community who very vocally got up and corrected me. So for me, the bright line between Council and GNSO has been made abundantly clear many times, but I understand that that's only a single view and that I'm being careful of a single view. Okay, moving on to the next bullet in this item. I had a conversation with Yanis after he got the letter, and basically his interpretation before going back to work with GAC on it was that, you know, there were the issues that we really cared about, but we did not mention the issue of names at the second level. And I basically told him that he shouldn't read that as the GNSO being in agreement with what the GAC was proposing there. It's just that in the short time that we had to develop the letter, that was an issue that there was a strong split on, and that it was impossible to determine where exactly the GNSO stood on it. So that is a message that I conveyed, that because it's not in there doesn't mean that the GNSO has agreed. By the same token, the position we took on the top level geographic names was, while there may be constituencies or individuals that might have issues as a council or as the GNSO, we weren't going to take a stand or make a statement. So then the question comes up to the council, having not done so in the letter, is that the case? Are we taking the same position? And if not, what do we want to do? Or are we fine with, you know, leaving it as it is? I wanted to put it on the table and open up the queue.
Add Chuck, please.
Chuck, anyone else? Go ahead, Chuck.
Aubrey, I'm not aware of the split you're talking about. I must be missing.
Well, when it was originally put in the letter, there was some issue with it, and it was withdrawn from the letter.
Oh, in the drafting of the letter, but I was going
back.
No,
we haven't had a vote at any point, and that's what I basically said. I don't know where we're at, but I do know that it was removed from the list.
Well, if we go back to the reserve names working group that was part of the new GTLD process, there was a pretty clear position taken there, and then later supported by the council as a whole and the GNSO as a whole, that there would not be any reserve names for geographic names at the second level. And so historically it doesn't seem like there's a split, but if there is one, I'd like to know that.
Okay, just to respond, We also said, you know, we also said the same thing about top level domain names, and we did make the decision not to make an issue. So I think that's where that, and also since in the drafting of the letter, we couldn't agree on what would be said there, that is what I'm basically saying, there's an undefined issue or split.
So I guess what I'm asking now, and we don't have to totally resolve it right now, but are there those within the GNSO that really do support the GAC's position of reserving geographic names at the second level? I haven't heard anybody say that, and I'd like to know. And that's fine if they do, but I haven't heard anybody advocate that.
Okay. Thanks. Anyone else on the queue?
Okay.
And anyone have an answer for Chuck?
Please?
Is this still an open issue in constituency?
Aubrey, it's Christina. This is an issue that, at least within the IPC, as the GAC is issuing documents, we're kind of making sure that our internal position on it isn't really affected by that. So to the extent that the GAC is coming out with new positions, we're pretty much reevaluating as we go.
And I think that's the same for the ISPs as well, Aubrey, that as this changes, then the issues are getting picked up. They're at least getting some discussion, so I couldn't come back to Chuck and say, yes, that's the case, but there's certainly some ongoing dialogue going to happen.
But I'm assuming that it's still the case that the council isn't at a point where it wants to put out a statement saying, and one that's reviewed by the constituencies, that, you know, we do not support or we do support the second level reserve list. We're not at a position where we want to make a statement either way. And so
well, then, Aubrey, one of the things, and we'll work on, we'll have time for this on the weekend and before the GAC meeting in, with the meeting with the GAC in Sydney. We need to think about how we're going to talk about this with the GAC there in light of, you know, at this point, if we don't have a clear position from the GNSO, I suspect that we'll, you know, each of us be participating on more of a individual constituency pack basis rather than a GNSO position.
Yeah, and there may be constituencies that together want to develop a statement, but that's a different issue. Okay. Anybody else wish to speak to this issue before moving on? So, yes, the subject of our joint meeting with the GAC is the two letters, their letter and our letter. And of course, their resulting letter. I don't believe that's out yet, is it? The final letter? I haven't noticed it.
Haven't seen it.
Aubrey, this is Kurt.
Hi, Kurt.
The second letter is going to be posted today, I think.
Okay, great. I knew it was sometime soon, but I knew I hadn't seen it. Okay, thanks. Any other comments then on this issue? So I will continue, if asked, to sort of say, no, it does not mean that the council has made any decisions on that particular aspect of the letter. Okay. That may have had two double negatives in it, but I hope you understand. Okay, any other issues, discussion on item 6 here? Okay, moving on to item 7. They said, since we don't have the report, I guess it's due out tomorrow, I did want to invite, though, either Christina, who's done it in the past, or perhaps and or someone from the staff to give us an update of where it's at, perhaps what's changing, what's not changing. I don't know what they can say about it at this point. It must be pretty close to finished if it's coming out tomorrow.
Kurt, do you want me to go ahead? Well, I'll just go ahead. The IRC, as announced, met in San Francisco the 11th through the 13th. The first day in its entirety consisted of presentations by entities and organizations that had participated in the public comment process on the DAG and had raised comments relating to trademark protection issues. So that was really a very lengthy day. I don't know off the top of my head how many presentations we had, but I think it was roughly like 10 or 12. Tuesday, we not only discussed as a group the presentations, but also all the public comments that had been submitted up to that point, and identified areas that we thought were raised either in presentations or in the public comments that merited further discussion and perhaps revision or adjustments to the report. And essentially from that point until we disbanded, I guess at about late Wednesday afternoon, continued working. We did not, as I think everyone knows, meet the May 24 deadline, and that was, I think, in large part attributable to the fact that there were so many public comments that raised issues that we wanted to make sure that we had either fully considered, or if we had not yet considered them, that we did so. And between that and the presentation, that just resulted in additional work. And it was really the view of the IRT that by getting the extra 5 days, we could, in fact, fully and adequately, in our view, address all of those issues while at the same time making sure that we were meeting the deadlines that needed to be met for other organizations within ICANN and individuals to be able to participate. I can't speak for everyone because we didn't have a poll, but I do know that notwithstanding the fact that we said that you'd had to have your comments in by the 6th to get considered, that many of us have been reviewing those comments and incorporating or at least raising issues that have been uniquely raised. The report is long. I think it's actually longer than it was before. We are very close to being done, and at this point we are talking about working within the IRT to figure out who would be available to not only participate in the session in Sydney, but also to work with the various constituencies and the SOs and the ACs to, if they are interested in having a briefing, be available for that, as well as the two fora that are scheduled for July 13 and 15 in New York and London, respectively. And Sahita, Mary, if there's anything that I've left out, feel free to jump in.
Okay. Does anyone have anything to add from staff or another member of the group? Okay. I'd like to open then a queue for questions, clarifications, whatever. Anyone have anything? No comment? Okay, then. Thank you.
Heather?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, just a short question to Christina. When is that IRT session in Sydney?
I think it's on the schedule for Wednesday afternoon.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Mary. I just joined the call, and Christina, it is Wednesday afternoon, right after the open meeting.
Okay, thank you. Did you have anything that you wanted to add to the discussion on that?
Oh. I'm sorry, I missed quite a lot of it because I was on another call.
Okay, thank you.
So, obviously, Mike?
Yes, Mike.
So, I'm just curious as to what the council is, what, if anything, I guess, the council is intending to do or say with the IRT's final report.
It's a good question. I think it'll be, and just give my opinion, then I'll open the queue. I think it'll be like any other issue where, as a council, first of all, we'll decide whether the GNSO or the council wants to make a statement on it as a coherent statement, whether we believe we can come to something that is a rough consensus statement. But if we can't, then this will be one of those things that, you know, go with constituencies and individuals. But I think we'll approach it, at least my view, is to approach it like everything else. This has come out. This is of concern to people on the GNSO, but can we arrive at a rough consensus statement or a consensus statement of GNSO / GNSO council viewpoint? And so that's what we'll have to determine.
Okay, I guess, yeah, it just seems to me like there's some definite policy development that has come out of the IRT report, assuming it is similar to what the prior report was. And the council probably ought to have a formal discussion about it and come to some sort of opinion on those policy recommendations.
Okay. That definitely seems to be one of the topics that we should talk about on whether it's the Saturday or the Sunday when we've got the report. Anyone else want to comment on that now or on any of the other issues on it? Okay.
It's Christina. I just want to state for the record that it is not the view of the IRT that we are making policy.
As I understand it, and someone correct me if the process, and I'm only describing the process, that the process is after this comes out, then there's an open comment period, which, of course, you know, the GNSO would be free as its component parts or as a united entity make a comment, and then pretty much it's up to the staff to integrate it into the DAG, and then then it goes along with the DAG in terms of formal reviews and eventual board approval or not. Is that the correct process?
I will defer to Kurt on that, but it was my understanding that the board, after the comments and the participation in the various four had been taken account, that it was at that point that the board would make a decision. But if that is incorrect,
the board
be corrected.
Okay, so I'd understood that wasn't happening, but perhaps Kurt can correct me on whether the board is taking a decision before it's folded into the DAG.
I don't think so. The board will probably give a sense of where it is on the issue, but I don't think they'll vote. The process, as I understand it, is that the afternoon meeting in Sydney on Wednesday is the first of at least three consultation sessions where the work of the IRT and the work of others can be put forward for discussion so that, a synthesis or a community consensus can be developed regarding which elements should be adopted for the guidebook. So there's the IRT report and then three follow-on consultations at least, one in Sydney, one in New York, one in London, to take that input and the input of others and do a synthesis and determine what goes into the guidebook. So I don't think there'll be a formal vote of the board, but I'm sure we'll get a sense or opinion of the board.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay. In which case, move on to the status update. First one is the board.
Hi, this is Denise. The resolutions have not yet been posted on ICANN's website, but I'll run through them quickly as soon as I get my laptop to work.
While that's happening, one question that I've had is, what accounts for the lag between the deciding on the resolutions and the posting them?
The General Counsel's Office would be the best place to direct that question, but my understanding is that all resolutions are drafted in advance and or completely agreed to by the board as written. And so at times there are, I think what you can call iterative resolutions or resolutions on the fly, and at times it takes some time to clarify with the contributors to the resolution, did it verbally, and the full board that the resolutions are correct, approved by the board.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so the board met on May 21st, and they've taken a new approach. I don't know if you've noticed, to board meetings. They have a consent agenda, a regular agenda, and an informational agenda. The intent of the consent agenda is, as the name implies, to approve all the items that are listed on the consent agenda en masse without discussing them. There are agenda items that are either pro forma or that have been discussed at length by the board previously and are ready simply for approval. The regular agenda is, as the agenda has always been with the board for discussion and potential action. Informational items are just papers and information provided to the board, not necessarily for discussion at the meeting. So a couple of items, I'll just highlight the items that I think are of interest to the GNSO, and happy to answer any questions. And of course, the full agenda is posted on the board website. They expect to get the resolutions up today, so you may want to check later today. The board on the consent agenda approved the charter for the geographic regions working group, which the GNSO is participating in, along with other SOs, ACs. Also on the consent agenda, they approved the package of RAA amendments. So that also has been approved. On the regular agenda, they received an update on GNSO improvements, in particular the older group charters and the constituency applications and the bylaws. They also received an update from CURD on the new GTLD implementation activities, including the IRT and geographic names and the expected timeline. As I noted on the email list, the board approved a resolution directing the Structural Improvements Committee to revisions to the proposed stakeholder group charters to bring them in line with the board GNSO improvements report and other resolutions, and send them to the GNSO and for public comment. The board also approved a resolution called on the Public Participation Committee to implement a process and timeline to assure that all documents that will be acted upon at the face-to-face ICANN meetings are posted in advance, and specifically are requesting all the staff and SOs and ACs and board members themselves, I imagine, to post items that need to be addressed by the GAC 3 weeks in advance of the face-to-face meeting to post other action items at least 2 weeks in advance, and to not address issues that haven't been posted in this manner. We'll send you a copy of that resolution as soon as it's posted. The board also discussed relating to RCEP request .biz. And should I say anything else that is of particular? They also approved for posting the enhancing student stability and resiliency plan. So that's on the public comment page. I think that's it for GNSO items of interest. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anyone like to be in the queue? No, there are no questions.
Philip, we want.
Okay, Philip.
Denise, what was the key issue on the stakeholder group charters change? Was it a common item or just an item to certain of them?
I think the common item that the Structural Improvements Committee was particularly focused on was ensuring that new constituencies in the future had an appropriate role in the stakeholder groups, and that the constituencies were, and the constituency structure was maintained along with stakeholder groups, and there was clarity for the roles of constituencies and stakeholder groups.
Hmm. Okay,
and I think, as you know, varies in how the current draft stakeholder group charters address those issues.
Yeah.
Okay, and those will be going to the stakeholder groups fairly soon?
Right, the Structural Improvements Committee plans to get those out shortly. They'll be sent directly to all of the constituencies, the council, and publicly posted.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Okay, thanks. The next item is the CCNSO liaison
update. That's Olga.
Yes, thank you, Avery. Well, the main issue to tell you is that the CNSO is in the process of formation, the IDNCC CDP Working Group 1, where Edmund and myself were appointed by representatives of GNSO. And, well, the group still needs two representatives from the at-large and the FSAC and the GAC, so it's still in the process of formation, but it's going to happen. So I'll let you know once we have some news about it and some activities about the working group. That's the main issue to tell you.
Okay, one thing I want to add is that in letting them know about the choice, I also asked whether the chair and vice chair of GNSO Council going forward could have observer status, and I was told that that was fine. So I don't know whether either will want to participate, but that observer status has been granted. Any questions or issues? Okay. Thank you. The next one is the Geographical Region Working Group update. I know we just heard that it was approved, but either Olga or Zahid, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, Avery, this is Olga again. The charter was approved by the board. I don't know if
you're hard to hear.
Yeah, I know. The board didn't approve the charter of the working group, but we'll do hopefully soon. And we tried to arrange a conference call, but there were many people that couldn't attend. So now we're in the process of having a new date for the next conference call. So mainly the things are in the same point as they were before. Only the due dates will maybe moving forward a little bit more than what they were expected.
Okay, thanks. Denise, correct me. Did you say that they had approved that now?
Maybe now, yes.
I just don't. I want to make sure that we've got the right thing in the note. Denise, are you on mute? Are you still here? Perhaps.
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm here. I'm sorry. What was the question?
The question was, the board has approved the charter for the Geographical Region Working Group. Did I hear you say that?
Yes, by unanimous consent.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, Olga.
Oh, great.
I'm sorry. This is Rob. Denise, that was the Geographic Regions Working Group.
Yes.
And although I think there is agreement within the board, they didn't officially approve it unless I missed something.
Okay, sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah, my mistake. It was on the consent agenda, but they had an additional question. You're right. Thanks, Rob, for correcting me.
Okay, thank you. So, okay, Olga, you were correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
I apologize for trying to correct you. I just had two bits of information that were in clash. Okay, anything or questions or other issues on that? Okay, thank you. On joint ACSO efforts, on the first one, the joint GNSO-CCNSO group, we have definitely agreed that we were having a common meeting again to discuss, and this will be the particular issue on it. Last I talked to Chris about it, I believe that the CCNSO was still in discussion about a joint working group, and I don't know where that stands at the moment. So on the RAA work with ALAC, I sent a note. Oh, first of all, are there any questions on the first one? Okay, thanks. On the RAA with ALAC, I sent a note to the council and to the beginning of the RAA team. And basically, I did have a couple conversations with the chair of ALAC. And basically, the first instance we had is that ALAC will, if I understand correctly, work basically in a model that includes their core team in ALAC and then an extended team that basically, you know, brings in the commentary and opinions from the ALSs. And the original decision that we had was that we would get our team and her core team together in a common phone call.
so that then they can start coordinating and figure out the model they wanted to have going forward, so that then we could create a charter that could be approved by both groups. I've since understood, and this may be something that needs to be corrected, that in some sense most of the core team that really cared has joined our group already, so that while we'll still have that joint conversation, we may find that most of the people in that meeting are actually already in the team that we've put together. The other thing I mentioned in the note is that while ALAC is well represented in that team, and I believe NCUC and registrars are, I don't believe, other than, you know, tangential, for example, Chuck as vice chair is on the list, but I don't believe the other constituencies have taken, you know, gotten involved yet, so I'm just sort of recommending that you may want to at least have one person who's sort of observing and contributing when necessary.
Aubrey, the someone from the registry constituency volunteered today.
Fantastic, thank you. So as I say, getting one each is probably a good idea, you know, and I understand that it's more observer and things that become important and less. So any comments or questions on that? Okay, thank you. Policy items. We have the various working groups. We have Fast Flux. And that's, is that either a liaison or staff want to give an update?
Mike, do you want to do the update or you want me to do it?
Are you on mute, Mike?
Sorry, I was on mute. I apologize. Marika, if you'd please go ahead. I appreciate it.
Okay. The other group is basically meeting on a weekly basis to try to wrap up and get to the final report. They've been reviewing the public comments and have now moved to the stage of working on the final recommendations, and their aim is to get a final report done round and about Sydney.
Okay, thanks. I have not put, I'll open up for questions, I have not put Fast Flux on the Wednesday agenda. I have, however, put them and the other one tentatively on the Thursday agenda to come in and talk with us during our wrap-up meeting. Is that a reasonable thing to have done?
In my opinion, I think so, because seeing the length of the report, I think it's unlikely that council will have had a chance to review it in detail to have an in-depth discussion, and at this stage, it's not clear whether we'll really have it completely finalized and published by Sydney. So, you know, we could put it on there tentatively, but as I said, I'm not sure whether we're going to make it and have it published by that time. Might be just after.
It might be good, even if there isn't a report, to have, you know, if the chair is available, and of course the liaison will be in the meeting, to have a brief update and discussion on it. In that meeting, in any case, even
yeah,
if no report.
Sense.
I think that would be good in any case, and maybe we can just give a brief update on it in the public meeting on Wednesday. Perhaps when was is the registration abuse policies group on the agenda for that?
No,
public
they're
meeting?
Also they're also going to be put them tentatively on the Thursday meeting also.
Okay.
Because I
okay.
didn't have an impression that they would be ready for substantive motion discussion at that point. Either.
They probably will have a status report out. I don't think there's any motion or anything attached.
Right.
It's just basically really what it's a status update, what they've done to date. So, I mean, it's for the council to consider whether they want to have that update in the public meeting or on the Thursday meeting.
Okay. And that's actually a good point. I mean, we could have just two quick reports at the end if people think that's a good idea. Just before going into the open mic, have a quick 5-minute report from each. Does that seem like a good idea?
There you go.
Somebody's talking
so.
Loud, I think.
Yeah, there you go. I think it's a good idea if you can fit it in.
Okay. It'll probably shorten the public mic by the same 10 minutes. It depends on how we run with schedule, though. Any other comments or questions on the working group? Okay. Thank you. Under drafting teams, is there anything new to report on travel policy? The one thing I have, which is not really travel policy, is that the list of names of who's traveling to Seoul, when I suggested, when I was saying, you know, because I was trying to figure out for bylaws and elections and everything of new council members for Seoul, I was told that September 8th might be a little late with the names, and they might actually want that stuff going by September 1. So there's been no formal decision yet, but be warned that the date is relatively early. Is there anything else from travel policy team?
No.
Okay, thanks.
Avery, can I just... there is one question that we're asking ourselves, and I was wondering what the council's view was on it, which is, really, where do we go from here in terms of overall travel policy going into the next fiscal year? I'm certainly not clear on it. I don't know if anyone else wants to comment on this or has any ideas.
I guess we still have the ICANN position is still in draft form, correct? So there's responding to that, there's waiting for that, and then I would assume that once the ICANN policy or procedures or whatever name we're tagging it with is determined, then of course the group may have some decisions to make in terms of how it deals with it, or that policy procedure may be such that it doesn't leave anything for the group to decide, and I don't really know. But I guess that's where I would think it was at the moment. Does anyone else have a comment?
Bearing in mind that my view of the reason for the group itself being in existence is to actually propose certain policy aspects before I can finalize it.
In which case, you know, at the moment there's something up for review, isn't there? Or has it been put up publicly for review?
I don't
yet?
Think so.
We had our early introduction to it, but we haven't had it put publicly. Is that correct?
I think it'll be posted shortly.
Right, okay. It's in that same bundle of things that's all going to happen before the two-week deadline.
And, Avra, it's Chuck.
Okay, Chuck.
I haven't had a chance to go through the budget document that was posted a couple weeks ago, but I suspect that probably has some clues with regard to funds that are being proposed for travel. I don't know if it's specific enough to...
Well, we were also given a report on a fairly specific one, was given on two phone calls. It was sort of a preview of what the policy would be.
Okay.
I sat through the phone call at 5 o'clock in the morning, so I'm not the one to report on its content. I don't know if anyone wants to report on it now, or perhaps this is something that the travel group should probably take up and discuss.
Avery, this is Olga.
Hi, Olga.
I couldn't participate in that call, but I saw some information sent to the GNSO Council list by Kevin Wilson, I think.
Yep.
Perhaps when the information is available for public comments, we should review it in the working team and perhaps draft something and share it with the council.
Yeah. I think except for when you can schedule it, I don't know that there's really any need to wait since we were given an early view of it so that we would be less pressured for time.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Olga's correct. I think I followed one of those meetings, and I think Tim followed another one. There were two. And Tim provided us with a very useful short report on the meeting itself, so perhaps that can be of use.
Yeah. So they don't. I would think it's probably worth starting, but you know, it will probably be out in the next day or two. So at this point, it's probably moot. Any other questions or comments on travel? I assume everybody is all set for this one. Anyone that needed ICANN support is well in process. If not, please shout to somebody. Okay, the GNSO Improvement Work Teams. Is there someone that can speak for the PPSC?
It's Liz. I'd be glad to.
Okay, please.
So we have in the PPSC two work teams, the PDP work team focused on improving and enhancing the current PDP. Jeff Newman is the chair of that work team. The group is currently discussing sort of pre-PDP initial planning and initiation, and then we'll consider sort of the subsequent phases of the PDP after that. And we have a draft document that we're working with to answer questions. And then the second group is the working group's work team, chaired by J. Scott Evans, which has divided into two subgroups, one looking at working group charters, which would be of use to the council when developing charters for working groups and guiding working groups, and then operating guidelines for working groups that would help working group chairs and participants in structuring and delivering outcomes as part of the working group itself. I will say for both groups that I think they are struggling with lack of participation and stretched bandwidth on the part of many participants. So I will just say that I think they're, both groups are probably reconsidering time frames for deliverables at this point, and that will be a topic of conversation on upcoming calls.
Neither of these, or I guess the question I would ask, are any of these activities being defined as critical paths for seating the new council? And I believe when the conversation came up, it was essentially no, as long as we made transitional provisions for PDPs in the bylaw changes. But is there any other view on whether any of these activities are critical paths? And if any are, is there a way to prioritize them so at least they get done?
I think you're right about the only thing having been identified is a transitional provision for the PDP for a newly structured council, and no other issues at this time.
Okay, thanks. Because on the working group charters, we do have the sort of interim thing, which seems to be being used fairly well, and so on. Okay. Any questions or comments? Okay, in which case, I guess we can move on to the OSC.
Yes, Avery. The GNSO operations team is considering principles to establish the role of the council as a strategic manager, and they've also been focusing on a new statement of interest policy. I also alerted them yesterday that one of their time-sensitive tasks, and I think this is a gating issue for seating the new council, is revision of the rules of procedure that the council uses to operate. So they received that message yesterday, and I think they're going to focus on that a little bit more. I pointed out to them that it's not as if all of the existing rules and procedure have to be done, but there are certain elements of it that will need to be done by then, because we now have in the rules of procedure things about the PDP and things like that, which obviously are going to take, I think it will take a little bit longer. Constituency and stakeholder operations team that Olga chairs, there's four subtask teams working. Each team is has developed a timeline and project plan for their tasks. There's been a lot of review and analysis of existing and proposed constituency and stakeholder group charters to give the group, especially those who haven't been part of constituencies, a good feel there. And then there's also some elements of constituency stakeholder toolkit services, stakeholder group toolkit services that a request for information will be forthcoming shortly from Olga to the council for people to get any additional input that they have, any changed opinions and anything on that as we continue to work on that. The community communications team, they're working, they're looking at the web design, doing some things on that, and developing business requirements for a new GNSO website, and they've also focused some on the need for translation on the website and elsewhere, and are working on an initial set of draft recommendations in that regard.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments? So basically, the one thing that is being defined as critical path, do you see any issue with it being able to be in place by Seoul? I mean, I don't know whether this council needs to approve it or that council needs to approve it as one of its first actions, but it does seem that around the same time it should be there. Do you see any issue with that being able to happen?
I don't think so. The reason I sent the message yesterday because I was a little concerned that they were focusing on some higher level issues and not accomplishing much on that task, but I think they understand the urgency now. And I've also asked the chair, Ray Fassett, to give me a regular update, progress status on that, so that including any red flags if they can't make the target time. And I pointed out that we really need that probably at the latest by the end of July, so that there's time for any iterations that might have to occur between the existing council and so forth, so that we can have it in pretty close to final shape in advance of the meeting in Seoul, and then it can either be approved before then or by the new council, whichever way we decide to go.
Right, and I'm wondering if the team can actually, while doing it, can give a recommendation on that.
We certainly can ask them to.
Any other questions or comments on that? Okay, thanks. Going to the restructuring group, the pending actions list, which is part of that same document with pending actions, the second page of that includes that table and with running updates. And we made an update pass through it yesterday. I think there's probably some more update work we can and should do with it. There's a lot of the pieces of it, as I look at it, that are either well underway and some may actually be done, but we need to basically gather them out and make sure those are all. So I'll be spending some time trying to understand that over the next days and weeks. Fortunately, I am short one contract, so I have lots of time free for ICANN now. The other thing that's been going on is the status of the bylaw discussion. But of course, this whole list is on that list, so has hopefully been able to follow it as much as they wish to. We're going through the issues. We're currently waiting on some responses from the SIC, from the board's committee on strategic improvements. I think we're making progress on the others. However, looking at it and looking at the schedule, going back to what I mentioned about travel and needing to have the names of who's traveling by the beginning of September, which means we have to have elections before then. Elections take about a month, so that means we need to have the ability to start holding elections in stakeholder groups by the beginning of August. The board will need at least a month to approve any bylaws changes because there's at least a three-week review period in their process from when they receive the recommendations from us. And then there's all the other issues of getting on their agenda. They have a meeting the 30th of July, so that pushes our schedule to being able to deliver our recommendations on the bylaws by the end of June. And that's sort of the schedule that we're driving towards. So we either can vote on it on the 24th, which seems a little pushing it to me, but it's possible. I certainly have the bylaws down there as an agenda item with voting on motion if we happen to be ready to. It's also possible to hold a special meeting the week after it, as unpleasant as that is, to just do the vote, or, as I've mentioned in the note, if all discussion is completed, we could hold a proper, you know, email ballot on this and do it that way. so, but I believe that's kind of the schedule. So we've got until the end of June, which in my mind means that we have until the end of the first week of June to have a fairly solid set of recommended changes, even if we're not fully complete, to basically send to the constituencies, and any unresolved issues we can continue working on and we can highlight to the constituencies so that we keep working towards that end of June deadline. Comments? As I say, we've got a whole meeting that we've been having on this that you're all part of it as much as you wish to be.
Aubrey, if I can comment, please.
Please.
Yeah, I just want to add to what you're saying and reinforce it a little bit. Hopefully in the next, within the next 2 weeks, maybe a little less than 2 weeks, the restructure group will be putting forward some bylaws, recommendations. Like Aubrey said, some of them may not be totally finalized, but what's going to be really critical is that each of the constituencies you start having discussions with those issues leading up to Sydney, and then make sure you plan time in Sydney to hopefully get as much definitive feedback as you can on those so that we can realistically either act on the 24th or the following week. So everybody's cooperation in that regard is going to be really, really important.
Yeah, thanks. Any questions or comments?
Just one clarification. Did I hear correctly? You say that any differences in terms of bylaw changes you're planning on deciding by voting?
No. Basically, we need to take a vote on this at the end to basically pass the recommendations on.
So we would say, okay, all this lot everybody agrees to. Here are
any
unresolved issues, but this is
right.
This itself is one act of the council.
And well, various things, and it's still something we need to discuss.
Yeah.
What I had basically said is, if during the first week of June we haven't decided on everything, we send the open issues description to the constituencies as well for comment.
Mm.
And then, you know, when it comes time to voting, you know, in the best of all possible worlds, we'll have an agreed-on bylaws that we can have, you know, a proper supermajority vote on. We can also divide the question if anyone proposes dividing the question in certain things, where we'll show that we've got, you know, supermajority on 12 things and majority on 8. Or that we have yet to figure out. We do need to take a vote at the end of the day, one or several, before passing it on to the board. That sound right to everyone?
Yes.
I'm just not certain in terms of, I mean, there may be some issues which are perhaps fundamental issues that if there can't be agreement based on the existing voting structure within council, may be better simply left unresolved and referred to the board to take a decision, rather than have, if you like, the old structure voting for the rules for the new one. I just find it a bit strange, that's all.
Yeah, I understand, but the bylaws do need to be changed, and of course there's always been changing the bylaws further later, but we need to have at least sufficient bylaws in place for the new structure to be able to start, and for it to have its base. I think if we have any of those issues that we want to basically say to the board, something like what you're saying, we can certainly add that to the motion and basically say on issue X, you know, we did not resolve, you know, perhaps we can recommend an interim provision that allows us to make it over the hill of getting to the new council. And then the new council can, of course, reconsider anything and make new recommendations. Once they start, it's there. And it's not like once something gets approved in bylaws to enable that council, they can't then change it or ask to change it. But it's something we probably should discuss further in terms of how we take our final decision. And are we saying that anything we don't have full consensus on, we just send, a statement of where we're at? If that's the way the council decides it wants to go, we could certainly go that way.
Okay.
But we have to discuss it, I think. I'll put it on one of the agendas for the bylaws meeting. Any other comments or questions on that? Okay. Preparation for Sydney. Have continued working on the schedules. Don't fully have the weekend schedules yet, but it looks like it'll be predominantly a new GTLD and aspects of new GTLDs, not maybe completely, on the Saturday, and some other, issues. And on the Sunday, it'll be predominantly the various teams working, the bylaws discussion, et cetera. I can go through the schedule. The AXO is still trying to finalize. It is some version of, the one that's in the schedule at the moment. Once there's a blessed new version, I'll post it. It'll be along the same sort of theme. I now have a tentative full schedule for the 24th, and I've got a fairly detailed outline of the schedule for the 25th. So I don't know if anybody wants to ask any specific questions about the schedule. I hope to have the weekend fairly well scoped out by the end of the week, if at all possible. There may still be some tentative and question marks, but I'm hoping that we can get there by the end of the week. Any issues? Okay, in the last couple minutes, then, I'd like to go to the action item list. I just want to make sure everybody's seen it. Very graciously, the policy staff, specifically Liz, has taken the token of doing this from me, and I very much appreciate her having done so and the effort she's put into it to make it better since she took it over. Let me find the file. Where is the file? So anyone could find it anytime. It is still...
It's on the link on the front page of the GNSO website.
Yeah. No, at the moment I'm just looking for where I've got
sorry.
It open and... And that, so I can go through it. I've got so many things open there.
Aubrey, while you do so, if I could just jump in and say
please.
This was an effort to also provide an update at a glance of where all the working group status is, a little more content, which came out of the council discussion recently looking for something like that. We talked at first about doing it on the wiki. This is an experiment to try to integrate it into the action item list. There are already a couple of updates that I've missed, so I can even be updating this more frequently, which I'm happy to do, but it was also intended to respond to that request.
And one thing you can do is, and it's one thing I always thought to do, but was always too lazy, was that any of these words can obviously be a URL link. So whether you're looking at it in PDF, Word, or on a wiki, any word can be a hyperlink.
Yeah, which I'll add to and enhance in the future.
So, did you want to, would it be perhaps good to take us on a quick walk of it? Because I don't know how many people actually look at it regularly. Try to keep it very updated. It's pretty much sorted in the date in which something got added to the list. There are essentially two lists. One is the pending action list for the GNSO Council of the stuff we are working on and have been various working teams, working groups, drafting teams, etc. Trying to track what has to be done next and who's doing it. And then the second thing is the inventory of key processes and implementation decisions to effectuate transition to restructured GNSO, which was updated on 26 May, trying to basically, this is that initial list that was prepared by, I believe, Rob, and that the council sort of accepted as a working list that we've gone over it a few times. Last time was 1 March. I went through it in the last couple days and made some suggested updates, which are there. And read through this, make sure it confirms their understanding, and bring up any issues where any of these don't. Because, you know, the staff has a really good view of what's happening in all the working teams, working groups, and drafting teams, because they are a, you know, group that is involved in all of them, and I'm assuming they talk to each other a bunch, probably more than we do. And so you know, looking for their help in trying to understand. But also there are people from all of those drafting teams, working groups, and work teams that are involved with the council. And so, you know, basically asking you to periodically, especially if you're the liaison to something, make sure that the box that, you know, applies to the thing you're a liaison on or a participant in or a chair of is indeed correct. Getting these things correct is such a collaborative effort. So many people are the only ones that see that we missed this or we missed that. Any comments or questions on that? I don't know if you wanted to take a more detailed walk through it. I don't.
I'll comment on it.
Okay, please, Chuck.
First of all, I want to really thank Liz because this is really becoming a much more useful tool, and I encourage people to refer to it, especially you also, some of you aren't interested in all the action, items on there, but there are certain areas that you are, and it's now been updated quite a lot, and I think you'll find it even more useful. I, for one, think that it's there's too much that with the amount of detail and the length of this that it doesn't make sense to try and even do a quick walkthrough of it now. But I guess if someone really thinks that's useful, we could do it.
Or if anybody happens to be looking at it and has a specific question that they'd like to bring up now.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
Since everyone can have it open if they happen to be on the net. Any questions or comments? Anything you'd like to add, Liz?
Just welcoming everyone's input, as Aubrey says. It's really collaborative. The status is changing every day as we all, you know, work as hard as we can. So really appreciate updates, and we'll try to keep it as updated as possible.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're actually updating it closer to real time, whereas I was barely getting it done before each of our meetings, that will already be another gigantic improvement.
Well, it's an aspirational statement, but...
Yes, I understand those. Any other questions, comments on this? Okay, is there any other business that anyone has that they'd like to bring up at this time? Nope. In which case, I thank you all. I wish you very safe and comfortable travel. And look forward to seeing you all in Sydney. Though, of course, I'll be talking to a lot of you, a lot over the next couple weeks as we have quite a few meetings and quite a lot of work to get done between now and then on our other calls. So if there's nothing else, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.